Morning Edition listeners first met David Sedaris in 1992 when he read from his diaries about being a department store elf confronting unruly customers at Christmas.
She said, "I'm going to have you fired." I had two people say that to me today. "I'm going to have you fired." Go ahead, be my guest. I'm wearing a green velvet costume. It doesn't get any worse than this. "I'm going to have you fired." And I want to lean over and say, "I'm going to have you killed."
This week, David Sedaris published his latest book of essays called Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. It's part memoir, part Freudian rant about his life and family. One essay features his foul-mouthed brother, who's just become a father, and it recaptures the Sedaris Christmas spirit.
The baby, of course, already knew what she would be getting. One of her presents was a phonetics aid called the Alphabet Pal. Press D, for example, and the machine recites the letter. Press D, then A, then D again, and it connects the letters into a clumsily pronounced word. Da-ad-duh. By Christmas morning, it had become my brother's toy. He is determined to make it curse, but the Alphabet Pal is crafty and decent, and soon figured out what he was up to. Ma-other-her is fine, but try following it with F, and by the second letter, the machine will giggle, and in a natural little girl voice, give you a piece of its mind. You're silly!
This is just fabulous.
My brother has just a filthy mouth, But after a while, the words don't really mean anything. That's part of the rhythm of his sentences.
Is he proud of being written about in your books? Does he read them?
My brother loves being written about. And he makes money off of it. And he has a website, and he sells barbecue sauce and T-shirts. And I was in a bookstore in Memphis, and I saw my brother's ugly T-shirts for sale right next to my book. He had contacted the bookstore and was selling them directly. I can't accuse him of exploiting me, because it's the other way around.
Sedaris writes about his dysfunctional family as observed by his dysfunctional self. In one essay, the family vacations at Emerald Isle in North Carolina. Their father suddenly decides he wants to buy a beach house. As the family drives to see it, they start dreaming that they'll name it, like an estate, the Ship Shape, the Tar Heel.
Each of us wanted to be the one who came up with a name. An inspiration could be hiding anywhere. The TV antenna, my sister Tiffany said. The telephone pole. The toothless black man selling shrimp from the back of his van. My mother inspired the cigarette butt thrown out the window and suggested we look for ideas on the beach rather than on the highway. I mean, my God, how depressing can you get? She acted annoyed, but we could tell she was really enjoying it. "Give me something that suits us," she said. "Give me something that will last." What would ultimately last were those 15 minutes on the coastal highway, but we didn't know that then. When older, even the crankiest of us would accept them as proof that we were once a happy family. Our mother, young and healthy. Our father, the man who could snap his fingers and give us everything we wanted. The whole lot of us competing to name our good fortune.
I'm kind of curious, how would you describe your outlook on the world exactly?
How do I describe my outlook on the world? Gee, I mean, I'm not a horrible pessimist. I think everybody has an eye for something different. Like, sometimes I walk into a room and I think, somebody in this room is missing a hand. And I'm just sure of it the second I walk in. And there is someone in that room missing a hand.
You've got that instinct.
And if I were to meet somebody, I would notice something different than, say, than my dad would. And sometimes I worry that I never really advanced beyond adolescence. You know, my voice didn't advance beyond it, but I don't think my interest did either. Anything that is grotesque, anything that is scatological, I'm right there. Like if they cracked open my skull, a 12-year-old would pop out. "It's perfect," my father said. "A real beauty, just like your mother here." He came from behind and pinched her on the bottom. She laughed and swatted him with a towel, and we witnessed what we would later come to recognize as the rejuvenating power of real estate. It's what fortunate couples turn to when their sex life has faded and they're too pious for affairs. A second car might bring people together for a week or two, but a second home can revitalize a marriage for up to 9 months after the closing. "Oh, Lou," my mother said, "what am I going to do with you?" "Whatever you want, baby," he said. "Whatever you want." It was queer when people repeated their sentences twice, but we were willing to overlook it in exchange for a beach house.
How much of this is true, exactly?
I think I changed things around a bit, but they're just story considerations. Luckily, everyone in my family has taken so many drugs that I can say to them, "Remember the time that Tiffany lied in the street, when we had Tiffany lie in the street so she would be hit by a car?" And they'll say, yeah, I remember. So I can pretty much get away with anything that way. Thank God for drugs. This is all to say that I exaggerate a lot.
David Sedaris' latest book is called Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. You can hear longer and edgier readings from the book at npr.org.